Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist Carl Stevens, and we're talking about his latest graphic work, The Winner. Carl, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, and I'm really embarrassed that I haven't found you before. So as a person who really covets really well done and not typical graphic works, this really came as a total surprise.
Oh, really? Oh, great.
And it's unexpected. I want to say that for the audience. First of all, your art style is realistic for the most part. And the topics discussed in this are very, very realistic. How is this different from other works from before?
It's a little different because I've decided to make it more autobiographical.
Oh, yeah.
That like I'm using like real names and
like you. But you're laying yourself bare. And that's the other thing that's going on this. I mean, you make no bones about being somewhat of a misanthrope. Certainly, I said that politically, but you know, you're putting your personal self out there. Did you have any trepidations about that?
I did. I mean, it's always a bit of a risk to try to write about your life in general, but especially when you're also drawing it too, because it sort of gives it this other layer of reality. And you know, I'm also drawing my wife too, so I have to make sure that, you know, she looks good. And
so, you know, you felt personal responsibility to her.
I did, of course.
This is going to sound bizarre. Is Alex still alive?
She is, yeah. You know, I get that a lot. And,
well, you know, you wrote in the middle of the book, and this totally threw me off the rails interpreting the book. Happy 3-year death anniversary, my darling. And all of a sudden, this whole thing started to go in a completely different direction than I thought it was going.
Yeah, that story is the first of the many, or not many, but the other like fantasy stories. Yeah, like four other fantasy stories. And I thought it would be a good introduction into that. And, you know, I deliberately did that because I did want to throw the reader off a bit.
And you did. Thank you. But I want to say that the conversations that the two of you have in this book is about a lot of things, but also about art, are really interesting. That's the part I think I most deeply enjoyed, is it captures that moment when you're with somebody who you really trust, who you've been with for a while, and you can have these sort of intellectual conversations. I've never read a book like that.
Oh, really? Oh, well, great. Well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it really came about organically. Like I've been doing this weekly strip for the Boston Phoenix for about 7 or 8 years, and the nature of that strip was sort of autobiographical. And I was writing mostly about my friends in and around Alton and Brighton, and you know, just like going out drinking and stuff like that. So I was starting to sort of get this naturalistic feel to a lot of my comics work, and this is sort of the like later day like extension of that, you know, because like a lot of the strips were very like conversational, and I thought, why not take that and make it into like a meta autobiographical comic?
And it's really beautiful too. I want to say that, and you know, that's the thing you don't say a lot about graphic works like this, but there's a real element of traditional artistic beauty in this, and I meant that in the best possible way.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I went to art school in Boston and like studied painting, and you know, I've have a real love for old master painters, like you know, like Rembrandt, and, you know, like Michelangelo.
Did you actually write that Rembrandt paper mentioned in the book?
Yeah, I wish.
Okay, so I was going to say that's a thankless task right there, is to write to have the temerity to think that you could add to the information on Rembrandt.
No, I'm purely an amateur scholar.
But what you said about scholarship and Rembrandt is true, though.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a dear friend who's a Dutch scholar, and that was kind of a shout out to her. So, but
cool.
I'm
totally into the Dutch period, the Dutch Republic period of painting. It's like amazing. But when you get to Rembrandt, I think scholarship's gone off the rails. And it's everybody's like stressing, you know, to find that one little nuanced thing that they can possibly say. And then to couple that is with the Rembrandt project, they keep finding that half the Rembrandts are fake.
Yeah, that's true. I know. Well, yeah, it goes back and forth. It is really interesting in that regard. But also, I mean, like, you know, they were like the first painters to do, sort of mainstream the like idea of doing genre painters.
Oh yeah,
Like genre painting that were like every day. So I mean, that's obviously something that I'm trying to do with the comics too. So I thought it was like a nice like parallel to it all.
What's fascinating is because this is one of the big questions you always have in your work. I can see this. You know, the fine art versus the graphic arts, you know, people don't, it's like if you're a fine artist, you're not supposed to be doing graphic art and vice versa. And right. You mentioned that in your book. I'm still having problems that people still believe that. And I know an awful lot of graphic artists who are also fine artists, and they all go through the same crap.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think a lot of it is mostly in my head. It is like psychological. I mean, but I have had run-ins with some galleries in New York and other places where, you know, they say that they like really like my work and that, you know, I'm this really interesting artist, but they're not sure like how they could sell my work like to their clients. You know, they're like, you know, this is really beautiful, but I'm not sure that my clients would be able to, you know, pay money for it.
Yeah. And it's all the problems that people have as an artist are laid bare in this book, by the way.
Yeah.
I love this conversation. One of my favorite sections of the conversations you have with Alex is, do you think my art could be considered subversive? By the way, I want to say that if this is really true to Alex, I really like Alex. Alex doesn't take any crap from you whatsoever.
Oh, she does not. Yeah, believe me. Yeah, I mean, she's...
You're really lucky to have Alex, man.
I really am, yeah. I mean, once we met, I mean, I knew that she was definitely the one.
And she got, her answer to that is, well, maybe submissive. And then you keep adding stuff, and she continues to sort of like turn it around on you, and it's like excellent. Now, if the comic was only those conversations, it would be wonderful. But then you do some really fascinating things. There are four sort of voyages into sort of fantastic comics, all of which the four of them are different from each other. They're really bizarre.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and then they all
end before you sort of get any satisfaction out of them. And I want to thank you for that. I love that feeling, like left high and dry. Ah, oh, denied again.
Yeah, I mean, like they are sort of sketches, I guess. I mean, I've spent like the past couple of years really falling hard for a lot of these French cartoonists that were around in like the 70s and 80s.
Oh yeah.
That were published in like Heavy Metal magazine.
Oh, I have all my original issues of Heavy Metal.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Great. Mobius was like one of my heroes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah, Jean Girard.
Yeah, oh, man.
Who else? I can't pronounce, it's like C-A-Z-A.
His
name.
And I can see, now that you mentioned this, I can really see that when you look at something like Drake It. By the way, thanks for naming a comic after a weird town in Massachusetts.
Yes, that's only us New Englanders will get that joke. You know, I mean, I always thought that like Drake had sounded like some sort of alien name.
It does. Yeah. And in fact, it's inhabited entirely by aliens.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, it's true.
I've only driven through, but.
Well, the comics are, and again, these four sort of sub-comics that, again, put the reader on a completely different track, and you sort of immediately get sucked into them. All of them are very, very different, to the point like the Cobalt Flame becomes a sort of fairy fantasy kind of a thing, which is – and I actually wanted to follow that all the way through several issues.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I keep toying like with the idea of doing like a longer like fantasy story that are based in some of these, and – I have written this whole script that actually though like combines all of the fantasy stories, the Cobalt Flame, Drake It, and Zula, and like they're all just part of the same world, and like David Bowie makes an appearance, and it's this whole like madness of a thing, and I don't know. I mean, I keep thinking about like doing it next.
You know, but that would sell as soon as you stuck Bowie in it. It was like it would sell.
Yeah,
and that's one of the big questions for you is you don't want to sell out.
Well, I mean,
well, you have to because you got to pay the rent, but you don't emotionally in your gut want to sell out.
Well, I do, but you know, like all cranky misanthropic artists, I'm going to be on my own terms. You know, I mean, like, you know, I don't want to be told to like do anything, which has always been a problem,
and get paid a huge amount of money for doing that.
Exactly.
Or for not doing that.
Yeah, for not doing that. I mean, like zero compromises. So I just want someone to show up with like a bag of money and just say, do whatever you want.
Every artist's dream. That is every artist's dream. It's amazing. And the other thing is there's great scenes of you is it a guard in a gallery?
That's right.
Was that real?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you actually give that answer to people who asked you?
Just in my head. I mean,
get that job back just so you can do that for real. Because I've actually been in galleries too, and I have so wanted to say crap like that.
Yeah, I mean,
I chickened out totally.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. Working as a gallery guard, like you really do see the full spectrum of of like human culture. Or just like how like people interact. I mean, it's a petri dish of society for sure.
I was a docent for 30 years, 35.
Oh yeah,
years.
That's right. I like read about that. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like Worcester Art Museum.
Yeah,
and there are times, you know, and you're representing the institution, so you can't. You're right. All that stuff has to happen in your head. However, there are times when it really gets close to coming to the surface.
I know. Well, I mean, as a docent, I mean, you actually are obligated to be nice to the people. But I mean, like as a guard, you can like kind of get away with being a little snarky because, you know, you're sort of there to be intimidating.
I want to talk to you about your career. Talk to me about when you started doing art. Like when was you one of these people that were drawing when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely one of those sad cases. I was like very young and I have my mother to blame. She encouraged me from, you know, age 4 or 5.
Cool.
You know, like she would draw like superheroes for me and, you know, I would copy them. And then, you know, we always get like the Sunday comics, of course, and mm-hmm. I would just pore over those and just, you know, copy the Garfield and like Calvin and Hobbes.
So did you go right to art school stuff? Or was that a later decision when you realized that's what you really wanted to do?
No, I went like right. I went right to art school. Yeah, there is. I was definitely like not smart enough to do anything else.
And the curtain is pulled back on a lot of other artists that, with that comment. I couldn't really do anything else, so I was left. So, what was art school like for you?
Well, it was very brief. I mean, like my family wasn't really able to help me out financially, so. Mm-hmm. I just did 2 semesters and I mean, I loved it. And, you know, I met a couple people that, you know, I'm still friends with like to this day. I'm like, one of them was my, like painting teacher who, really sort of took me under his wing and like, you know, would come by for studio visits after I dropped out. And, you know, he would, you know, like just encourage me to like, just keep doing like what I was doing. So, but, you know, I mean, like, other than that, it was sort of like a typical experience where, although, I mean, I was like kind of nerdy. I mean, I was always just, like, drawing and, like, doing work. Like, I wasn't partying, like, at all when I was that age. I was just very, like, driven and just really just wanted to learn, you know, all the nuts and bolts of drawing and painting. So,
did you always gravitate towards realism?
Yeah.
Or did you have, a brief abstract period like a lot of people do?
Yeah, I did. When I was in art school, because
you have to,
I had like a really good like 2D design teacher who, and you know, who like encouraged me to look at like a lot of the abstract expressionists and like Jasper Johns mm-hmm. and you know like Robert Motherwell and you know just getting me interested in just like thinking about like simple shapes and like how they orchestrate and like composition. And so there was definitely a period where I was doing like a lot of like shape paintings and like just, you know, thinking about composition in a, you know, non-objective way. But I don't know. But then, you know, I discovered Rembrandt and, you know, and the Dutch painters.
Enough of this silliness. On to Rembrandt. As soon as you start getting into Dutch, you know, sort of art of that Dutch Republic of the 17th century Dutch art, It can really suck you in from so many points of view, from subject matter, from the use of light, to just the richness of the colors and stuff like that are just amazing.
Yeah, it's true. But it also sort of like relates to comics too, because like around that time, I was definitely looking at like a lot of underground comics, you know, like Art Crumb, of course.
Yep.
And like Peter Bagg and like Julie Ducey.
Oh man, yeah.
So, you know, like all them, and, you know, so like that just really, you know, started just making me think about the figure again. And so it sort of became this like hybrid. Yeah.
For people who haven't looked at a lot of Dutch Republic art, there's a lot of rowdy crap that goes into some of these genre scenes. Like there's people taking a piss in the background of some paintings, dogs taking craps in the painting.
Well, yeah.
People are roaring drunk and all sorts of stuff has happened. And I remember we were taught like in art history, like, well, you know, they're really strict Calvinists and these paintings were supposed to be like, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to go into somebody's house and take a leak in the living room. But they seem to be having a really good time painting it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they were like the underground.
They really were.
You know, comics with an X.
I could really see the Art Crumb connection and the Julie Doucet connection in some of these Dutch Republic paintings. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist Carl Stevens, and we're talking about his latest graphic work, The Winner, which I strongly recommend. It is, again, I don't get a lot of comics where I just get into the artistry, the beauty of that, and of portraiture, which was beautiful. I want to talk to you about color use in this book, because some of the stuff is in black and white, some of the stuff is color, some of the stuff, the paper is colored. Was that your decision?
It was, yeah. I mean, everything in the book was completely my decision, and it's all hand-drawn, too. I didn't use any sort of computer simulation.
Oh, I know. I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
But talk to me about the color changes, because the thing is, there's a very famous movie called If by Lindsay Anderson, a British sort of auteur. And
I've not seen that one. I know.
Part of the movie's in black and white and part of the movie's in color. And so people had all sorts of theories about why this was in black and white, why this was in color. And it ended up, it's because he ran out of color stock film, you know. So I wanted to ask you, was it this done for some symbolic reason or just sort of for pure visual flow?
It was just for pure visual flow.
Okay.
I mean, I'd been interested in color for a long time, but the like black and white pieces, I just thought, I mean, for some reason, I can't really answer why, that they just looked better in black and white. I mean, particularly the werewolf story, I just thought it just needed to have this like stark, you know, black and white sort of style. You know?
Right, exactly. Well, and also, once you put color and then all the blood and gore, that overwhelms the whole story part of it.
Yeah.
It just becomes sort of obvious.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what like George Romero, you know, with the First Night of Living Dead.
I know it was totally shocking to have seen that first run, which I did.
Really?
Yeah, and it had a really creepy effect on you being in black and white. It had a completely and there were a bunch of 50s horror movies that were like that, like House on Haunted Hill, that were in black and white, really, and actually it in these sort of eerie grays that really sort of added to the atmosphere and added to the feeling for it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
but the use of colored paper I had not seen before, and I thought that was really interesting too.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to like have it pop out of the page like a little bit, you know, not sinking. So that's why I went for it.
I got to talk to you about your strips.
About my what?
Your strips.
Oh, okay.
You're like the last person having read this that I would have thought will sat down and go, yeah, let's do a strip. And take that in a good way. But, you know, talk to me about starting a strip. Were you at all? I mean, you've done Penny, which is a strip for the Village Voice. Mm-hmm. You did Whatever for the Boston Phoenix. Failure. Talk to me about starting strips, because that's a whole different mindset right there.
Yeah, well, I kind of fell into it because I did my first book, which was called Guilty, which was a graphic novel. And I like won a grant for it. I was like 25 when I did it, and it was about, you know, just these kids living in Austin, and the like Boston Phoenix did a review of it, and the art director at the time thought it would be cool to like start running a strip that was sort of similar, that was just about, you know, people in their 20s post college like living in Boston. So I you know, I just came up with an idea with some characters, and that's what whatever became. So, yeah.
But you have to do this weekly. What was it like to keep having to approach that week after week after week? I mean, you started that in 2005.
Yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, it was, you know, definitely like I had no idea what I was doing for the first like 2 years.
Wow.
And
and you're facing a deadline every yeah. freaking week.
Yeah, yeah, they were very patient with me, but you know, I like learned how to do it eventually, and I think the key was just like getting characters in there that I could just keep coming back to, and you know, that just made it easier to write. And but it was definitely a slog after a while, just like trying to come up with like new ideas. I mean, now I'm actually doing stuff for the New Yorker. I just sold a cartoon actually last week.
That's no small deal, man.
No, it's not, man.
Had you submitted before?
No, they had like asked me like out of the blue, I guess.
Oh man, you're made in the shade.
Like, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Like I went down there for like an interview. Like, I guess the cartoon editor was in this bookstore in Brooklyn, and like had like found a copy of The Winner and just flipped through it and thought that I would be a good fit. So I don't know. So like she contacted my art gallery, and then my art gallery contacted me. I know. Isn't that the coolest way to get a?
That's like unheard of. That's like actually great. Usually everybody's sweating out submissions over months and years, and then finally one gets in.
I know. I'm really disgusted with myself.
That's a topic in the book, by the way. It's like that actually comes up in The Winner, where you go, do I really think too much of myself? And then, you know, and again, this is why I love her. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, at times. Yeah, sure. Talk to me about that interview process. I'm really fascinated. What was it like to interview with The New Yorker?
Oh, I mean, it was like really informal. I mean, like,
you had to bring a portfolio and stuff?
No. I mean, like we just like a coffee. And just like talked. I mean, like, you know, like she's incredible. The editor. She started. She like took over for this guy who had been there for about I don't know how long. Like
a long time. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book about being the editor for the and I can't remember his name right now.
Bob Mankoff.
Right, and he wrote a great book about what it's like to be a cartoon editor for the New Yorker, and it sounded like an incredible process, and just, you know, you have to get to be like Ross Chast after a while, and you know, if you're recognized, you're fine, but for a lot of beginning people, it's just really torturous getting in there to get your foot in the door.
Oh yeah, I mean I can't even imagine.
What, I mean, we only have a few minutes left, and I just want to talk to you. One of the things, I think people who are not artists have totally unrealistic ideas about how artists live, and I know this from talking to people being a docent. Mm-hmm. They think you're rolling in the dough and everything's really cool. And you deal with this somewhat at times in the winter too. You know, you're waiting for a grant, they're late. You don't have the money. I mean, can you just address that issue, what it's like to live like an artist, you're like yourself?
Well, I mean, it's definitely like stressful. I mean, far as that goes, I mean, you know, I've always, you know, had to work dumb jobs, and I've been fortunate to like have dumb jobs that have allowed me to do work on the side.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's definitely just sort of piecemeal. I mean, like there like have been periods where I've just lived off the art, just doing illustration work, and you know, that's something like the like most stressful, because you just never know when like the next check's coming in, and like you spend a lot of your time just, you know, like invoicing and just trying to get people to pay up, because if there's one rule in making art, is that no one likes to pay artists.
It's absolutely true, and you know, we laugh about it, but there's this weird feeling by especially non-art people that, mm-hmm. Well, why wouldn't you do it for free? You know, of course, you know, yeah, just, Mike, can you do that illustration for me for nothing? Because you're an artist. And of course, that would be easy. That's what you do.
Right.
It's like we breathe. Yeah. I think people think like doing art is like breathing, and then we can just roll it off our hand and everything will be cool. And it's not that way.
It is not that way. Yeah, we have to eat too. And it's just like the amount of time that it takes, and yeah, don't get me started.
Now, how about your painting career? And do you have gallery representation?
Yeah, I do in Boston at the Carroll and Sons Gallery, and okay. Actually, you can see selections from the winner. The original watercolors and drawings are
nice.
There now. Yeah, it's Carroll and Sons. It's 450 Harrison in the South End in Boston.
I think that was what was most alarming about the winter was the quality of the work inside. And again, that sounds weird, but you know, it was like there were times I was looking at galleries of serious artwork, and it was really unsettling to see work of that quality in a comic.
Oh, well, thanks, man. That means a lot.
Yeah, and that was interesting. I mean, that sort of juxtaposition was rude. Now, what are you going to work on next? Do you sort of feel like you have to keep your foot in the door of doing graphic work so that people recognize you and will pick up your work?
Well, it's more that I just want to do that. You know, I'm about like 100 pages into the next book.
Oh, and good.
Hopefully, we'll get it out by next year. And it's taking what I was doing, like with the winter, to like the next level, in sense that like all the auto bio stuff is really amped up, but it's more from like the Carl perspective as opposed to like, you know, just like seeing him,
yep.
You know, it's more from like his eyes and some of the fantasy stuff. And like, I'm working the penny strips into the book too.
So nice.
It's becoming this like monster of a thing. So that's what's next.
I'm psyched. I actually want you to work faster.
Okay.
Because you're an artist. You're an artist. You can do that.
That's right.
You're just purposely being slow.
That's right. I'm just lazy and stoned.
Yeah, as most artists are.
That's right.
My guest tonight has been artist Carl Stevens, and we've been talking about his latest graphic work. It's really good. It's good from a lot of different perspectives, from the artwork, from the story, and just the flow of it is unexpected. The winner. Carl, it's been a real pleasure.
Likewise, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
I just want to quote you from your book. You have to joke because the only other option is losing your mind. I love that. Thank you so much, Carl, for your time. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.